Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Wendy Darling, An Immortal Warrior's Romance by Rebecca F. Kenny. Narrated by Danny California. 1. Peter's shadow showed up in my office at 10 o'clock in the morning while I was patiently telling a customer how to reset her password. The shadow appeared on the beigey fabric-covered wall of my cubicle, posed as if sitting atop my desk, knees pulled up and chin resting on them. It still wore a rakish hat, but the long feather was ragged and drooping. I nearly swore on the phone, but I bit it back just in time and kept talking sweetly to the customer. "Did you get the email? Okay, just click on that link and it'll take you to a place where you can enter a new password. Yes, it can be any password, but we do recommend something that's hard to guess and includes more than 6 letters and a number or special character." "Yes, ma'am." "Yes. Is there anything else I can help you with?" "Great. You have a good day now." I ended the call and whirled my chair around, my heart tripping. Peter wasn't behind me, of course. My co-worker Valerie sat in the opposite cubicle, feet on her desk, squeezing a stress ball and chattering to a client. She raised an eyebrow quizzically at me, but she didn't seem to see the shadow. Maybe it was only visible to someone who'd been to Neverland. I gave Valerie a shaky smile and turned back around. The shadow was still there above my desk, just to the right of my computer screen. Tentatively, I reached out and pressed my palm to the wall of the cubicle. A shiver ran over the shadow, but it did not move. 10 years since John and Mike and I followed Peter to Neverland. 10 years since we returned to our world and had to continue living as if nothing had happened, like those kids who came back from freaking Narnia. The weight of an experience like that doesn't go away. It follows you, clings to you like static, crawls under your eyelids at night. A handful of notes at a concert remind you of a melody played on a boy's pipe. The glimmer of sunlight through green leaves makes you spin, quick and breathless, half expecting a tiny pixie to flutter from your peripheral vision and alight in your palm. And it never happens. With each disappointment, your heart doesn't shatter, but it forms a tiny crack. 1,000 false hopes, 1,000 fractures spiderwebbed across your soul, until it is a dull, heavy thing seamed with the scars of disenchantment. 10 years of nothing, and now this? "Why are you here?" My words were barely above a breath. The shadow didn't answer. For the rest of the morning, it hovered in that spot, occasionally changing position. By lunchtime, it was lying on its belly, twirling its cocked hat on one finger.
"Sully steamers today?"
asked Valerie, poking her head into my cubicle. I typed the last line of notes about the most recent call and saved the record. "I've got some personal errands to do on my lunch break. Rain check?"
"Sure."
She sauntered away, popping her gum like someone out of an 80s movie. To be honest, her outfits always looked kind of 80s, too, and not in the good vintage way. Fashion choices aside, I liked her. She was sure of herself, content in her job, and a fun conversationalist. Unlike me. I never knew what to talk about, and too often I would tune people out mid-conversation. I didn't mean to, it just happened. I would miss crucial details, and the next time I saw the person, I would forget how many kids they had, or whether they were trying to sell their house, or which family member had been sick.
And then they would think I didn't care, which wasn't true at all. Well, maybe it was. Maybe I didn't actually care. Maybe I was faking all of it. The career path, the human interest, the cute little apartment just far enough from downtown to be affordable. Maybe the only time I felt really alive was when I participated in a Renaissance fair, or a comic book convention, or a community theater production. Maybe I felt more at home in fictional situations than I did in real life. Was that so wrong? I collected my purse and backed out of my cubicle, eyeing Peter's shadow. It slid down across my desk and onto the floor, merging with my own indistinct shadow. I didn't dare glance at it too often as I navigated the maze of cubicles to the elevator. Heaven forbid I look weird to my coworkers. The pointed ears and cocked hat were the same, but Peter's shadow was much taller than I remembered, broader through the shoulders with thicker arms. Or maybe that was my imagination. It was a shadow, after all. It could shift in size and proportion. The sight of that male silhouette striding along the wall beside me sent a ripple through my heart. Because Peter Pan was my first real crush. I'd had likes before him. Mild, warm, cutesy feelings toward boys in my classes. But when Peter came for us, I was a romantic and vulnerable 15, and I crashed hard. Who wouldn't, really? He was slim and boyishly handsome with dancing eyes. He had magic in his bones and music in his mouth, and he'd smiled at me like I was special, like I was the only girl he'd ever brought to his island. Not true, of course, but something in the way he'd held my hand as we flew had felt thrillingly significant. I was freaking 15. I'd probably imagined Peter's attraction to me. He'd ignored me for 10 years, so obviously I was nothing special. For the first few years after our return, I'd written some very dark and passionate poetry in my journals. A few months ago, I'd found one of the journals in the bottom of a box I hadn't unpacked since my move to the apartment. Every stanza of my teenage poems was cringeworthy, but they carried an echo of real harsh pain that hurt me even as I read them. Peter's shadow made me heartsore like that, sick for something I'd wanted for years and could never have. The reason I never dated anyone for longer than a few months. My handful of boyfriends had been sweet guys, attentive guys, normal, stable guys. But none of them were quite right because I was still hung up on a fey boy. So stupid. I swung angrily through the office building's doors, out into the bright sun, and marched across the aisles of the parking lot to my car. I managed to snag a spot in the half-shade of a scraggly maple, so the interior of the Toyota was a little less of a furnace than usual. I flung myself into the driver's seat, rolled down the windows, and called John, the older of my two little brothers. Miracle of miracles, he actually picked up.
Wendy?
John! Hey! I said with false brightness. What's up?
You called me, he said. Shouldn't I be the one asking that question?
Yeah. Well, you're going to think this is super random, but has anything strange happened to you lately? Like, anything, I pinched the bridge of my nose. Anything magical? I waited, eyes screwed shut.
No, Wendy, John said slowly, carefully. I haven't experienced anything like that. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I just... Peter's shadow showed up at my office today.
More silence. Okay, he said. Do you want to talk about it?
That's why I called you.
You know how I feel about treating family members, John said.
I didn't call you for your PhD in psychology. I called you as my brother, as someone else who's been to Neverland, who knows Peter.
Listen, Wendy, I won't deny that the three of us had some kind of metaphysical experience, exaggerated by our overactive imaginations. But you shouldn't still be entertaining these delusions. If you're actually hallucinating, you need to talk to someone. I can recommend...
It's not a delusion or a hallucination, I snapped. The shadow followed me from my office. It's sitting in the passenger seat of my car right now. If you were here, you'd be able to see it too, I think. I hesitated, taking in the dejected slump of the shadow's shoulders. I think Peter's in some kind of trouble. John's voice was tight with frustration.
I can't do this right now, Wendy. Look, I'll email you some names of good therapists in your area, okay? You need to get some help. I'll be in touch. Love you.
Love you too, I said through gritted teeth, but he'd already ended the call. I glanced over at the shadow and shrugged. Not sure why I bothered calling him. I should have known he'd react that way. The shadow took off its hat and ruffled its thick hair before jamming the hat on again. The movement was so painfully Peter that my heart knotted up. Desperately, I scrolled to my brother Mike's name in my contacts and pressed it. Mike didn't answer, and I listened all the way through his douchey voicemail intro before deciding I didn't really want to leave a message about seeing the shadow of our mysterious mutual friend. The shadow stayed with me while I stopped at a nearby drive-thru to grab a salad, and as I answered calls for the rest of the day, my skin was fairly crawling with restless suspense by 4 o'clock. I could barely sit still in my chair and focus on the inane, repetitive problems people muttered into my headpiece. I'd chosen an IT major because it was a stable field. Unless an electromagnetic pulse wiped out all the tech in the world, there would always be a place for IT professionals. I'd been looking for a career as prosaic and unimaginative as possible, something to settle my overactive mind and help me transition to grown-up life. The company I worked for had been numbingly average when my freshly graduated self secured a job in the customer service department. But over the past few years, I'd noticed a gradual upward trend in morale. A growing cheerfulness as profit margins widened and bonuses increased, and wonder of wonders, the upper management didn't keep all the benefits to themselves. The rest of us profited too, in higher cost of living increases, fancy break room coffee machines, free lunches, new tech. We IT grunts were still in cubicles, but our desks were glossier and our chairs were plusher. All in all, it wasn't a bad place to be, even if the work tended to be grindingly monotonous at times. The coding and configuration parts of the job were occasionally frustrating, but sometimes a fun challenge. Not so much the incessant banality of customer problems, most of which could have been easily solved with the smallest application of common sense or a couple Google searches. I tried not to complain, or to let on to my highly successful parents that I missed being part of the upper middle class. I was lucky to have an actual bedroom instead of just a studio apartment. Lucky not to have to share space with a roommate. Lucky to have a little extra padding in my checking account after bills. That extra padding enabled me to pursue my real passions. Swordplay, martial arts, strategy games, and Ren fairs. Of course, These hobbies were just a thin disguise for my true obsession, which was everything and anything that could possibly remind me of Neverland and Peter. Now that a piece of Neverland, of Peter himself, had popped back into my life, I was becoming more and more useless by the hour. Around 4:30, I told some lady to click on the second icon to the right, and then I started giggling so hard I could barely finish the call. Okay, time to go. My boss, Thane, was a decent guy, and when I told him I wasn't feeling well, he agreed to let me leave early. The feeling sick part wasn't a lie, because my guts kept cinching and corkscrewing, and my nerves were pretty much shot to hell. Somehow, I made it back to my apartment, but when I got there, I couldn't really remember anything about the drive. It was a blur of anxiety and traffic lights and shifting shadows in the passenger seat. The ceiling light in the hallway outside my apartment was out again, and I could barely see well enough to get my key into the lock. If Peter's shadow was still around, it blended in too seamlessly for me to perceive it. I shut my apartment door and backed away from it, keys clutched to my chest while I scanned the walls and the floor and the ceiling. Was the shadow gone? Maybe John was right and I'd imagined it after all. Because why on earth would Peter's shadow show up after all these years, and why would it come to me of all people? I leaned down and switched on the lamp beside the sofa. Something moved by the door, a darkness seeping under it. The shadow emerged, long and thin and mournful, stretched across the faux hardwood. It crept up the wall by the kitchenette, darker now, with crisper edges, its essence swallowing the framed prints of delicate garden herbs. My fingers curled into fists. Why are you here? The shadow put both hands on its hips and shook its head. Look, I don't need attitude from you. I need answers. Why did you leave him? Are you some kind of message? My heart throbbed with the words I'd been cradling inside myself all day. Is he coming here? The shadow walked up the wall, onto the ceiling, curled around my light fixture, swept down the opposite wall, and slithered onto the armchair. 10 years ago, when it first escaped Peter and came into our house, it had been so quick and playful, eager to mime a conversation with me or Mike. Now it seemed slower, more doleful, depressed even. It gestured toward the TV. Fine. I grabbed the remote and started episode 1 of The Queen's Gambit on Netflix. I'd watched the show twice through already. Do you even have eyes? How can you watch TV? The shadow pressed a finger to its lips before relaxing in the chair again. I didn't feel like eating, so I hopped on the exercise bike and rode it hard until my pulse was jumping and my skin was clammy with sweat. Then I headed for the bathroom with a stern, "Don't follow me," to the shadow. After my shower, I dressed in my pajama shorts and a low-cut tank top. Then I went to my bureau and opened a small cedar box. Inside it lay my 4 most treasured items. To anyone else, they would have looked silly. A minuscule vial of salt water, a tiny cloth bag of glitter, a makeshift comb made from a broken shell, and a necklace with an acorn nestled in the center of a Celtic knot pendant. It was the same acorn Peter gave me the first time we met, when I taught him what a real kiss was. I'd had it preserved and set into the necklace as my gift to myself when I turned 16. There was still a dent in the backside of the acorn, where one of the lost kids had shot me with an arrow the day I arrived in Neverland. I clasped the necklace around my throat and stared at it in the mirror, liking the way the pendant nestled right at the apex of my cleavage. Maybe I should wear something less revealing, in case Peter did show up to claim his shadow. After all, he'd looked about 16 when I knew him, though he was older in Fey years. If he still looked 16, it would be a little weird for a 25-year-old woman to crush on him. I had no idea if he aged at all, or how slowly. I frowned ferociously at my reflection. What was I thinking? If Peter did come to my apartment, it would only be to grab his wayward shadow and leave. He didn't take adults to his island, only children. He'd said something about protecting them until the danger was past. I hadn't really paid attention at the time, too starry-eyed, trying to absorb all the wonder of Neverland at once. When I returned to the living room, Peter's shadow hadn't moved, probably fascinated by the understated intensity of the world of high-stakes chess. I opened a bottle of Pinot Grigio, because why the hell not after the day I'd had? Sipping from my glass, I went to the sliding door and pulled the cord to open the blinds. Past the twisty iron railing of the balcony, above the jumble of laundromats and convenience stores and duplexes, the evening sky was a dark and dramatic indigo, shot through with lingering streaks of vivid orange, strewn with tattered gray clouds. A strange sky. A wretchedly mysterious sky. The kind of sky that always made me think of ships that sailed the air instead of the sea. I stood there while the orange streamers of sunset faded away into night. Here, on the outskirts of the city center, the light pollution was so bad I was lucky to glimpse one star, let alone two. Sighing, I cupped my wine glass and settled on the sofa. Peter's shadow shifted, turning its profile toward me for a second. "He's not coming," I told it, as I had told myself over and over for 10 years. "If you want him, you'll have to find your own way back." The shadow sprang clear of the chair and shot onto the ceiling, streaking across it and racing away into the kitchen. "Fine, don't go back. But you can't follow me around every day, okay? It will drive me nuts." I stood, skirting the end of the couch and peering into the kitchen. The shadow was hunched on the wall next to the fridge. "Nod if you understand." The shadow lifted its hand. Was it pointing? At me? "Yes, me," I repeated, frowning. "You can't follow me around. Got it?" It shook its head, still pointing. "You don't make any sense. What are you trying to tell me?" A triple tap sounded from the window behind me. My fingers tightened on the bowl of the wine glass. Slowly, I set it down on the counter, and I turned around. 2. Peter Pan stood on my balcony on the other side of the glass doors, and he clearly wasn't 16 anymore. He had the same thick shock of auburn hair, lighter and redder than mine, but the waves were tamer now, more controlled. He was broader, more muscular, with firmer features and a resolute hardness to his jaw. He wore a short sword and a frown that proclaimed how much he didn't want to be here. I looked for his constant companion, his half-sister Trill. She lived under a 100-year miniaturization curse, unbreakable, which had reduced her from normal pixie stature to a palm-sized fairy. She and I hadn't started on the best of terms, but by the end of my stay in Neverland, we'd become nearly inseparable. She'd cried when I left, collecting her tears in a vial that would barely have fit the tip of my little finger. She had stoppered the vial and given it to me, claiming that the tears of a cursed fae had special power. Just as she was about to explain more, the lost kids had swarmed around me to say goodbye, and their noise had swallowed her faint, chiming voice. Why wasn't she with him tonight? Peter tapped again, his frown deepening, and I hurried to undo the latch. The glass door was heavy, sliding reluctantly along its grimy track, and I only got it open a few inches before it stuck. Desperately, I wrenched at it, a soft swear escaping my mouth. I clapped my hand over my lips a second later, eyes flashing up to Peter.
What? He cocked an eyebrow. I'm not a child. You can swear in front of me.
I didn't want that to be the first word I said to you, I gritted out, tugging at the door.
Step back, he said.
My face burning, I took a step back, and his hands closed over the edge of the obstinate door. His hands had changed, too. Still long-fingered, but slightly thicker and stronger. The left one sparkled with rings, and leaf-shaped leather wraps covered his wrists. One quick, powerful pull from those hands, and the door slid aside. He stepped in, and my heart somersaulted. Peter Pan was in my apartment. I had fantasized about him coming to my place so many times. Very naughty fantasies, some of them. Far different from the stories I used to tell my brothers. He looked down at me, and I licked my dry lips, trying to think past the heated blur in my brain. He was shirtless, dressed in dark leggings. His well-worn leather boots were wrapped or mended with large green leaves. I didn't look too closely because I was more captivated by his chest than his feet. Specks of golden pixie dust glittered on that smooth, bare expanse of skin, accentuating the lean hardness of his pecs and abs. Every inch of him was spare and rock-hard, as if he'd been training and exercising with Spartan austerity. He was no bodybuilder type, but he radiated an intense, disciplined power that I found very hot.
Wendy.
His voice was deeper than I remembered.
Where is it?
Where is what? I countered, not sure if I wanted to betray the shadow's location just yet. After all, the longer I put off telling him where it was, the longer he'd have to stay.
My shadow.
He moved past me, a whiff of sea salt and night air skimming beneath my nose.
I know it came to you, treacherous thing that it is.
Why would it come to me? Without answering, he began to prowl my living space, checking behind the TV and the armchair. Hurt and anger writhed up together inside me, and I crossed my arms. You're still just a rude boy, aren't you? No manners at all. He looked up at me, eyes narrowed.
Rude? I stated my business immediately. That's me being respectful of your time.
No. You should have said something like, "Hello, Wendy. What a pleasure to see you again. Gosh, it's been a long time. How are you? Life treating you well? How are your brothers?" Like that. See? You should have said something like that.
Very well, then.
He straightened, clearing his throat.
Hello, Wendy. How are you?
I'm good. Not super great, but better off than some.
And how...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?